The world is changing at breathtaking speeds, with trends and fads popping up and passing away at breakneck pace. Against that backdrop of nearly constant upheaval, we welcome you to the Sunday Scotch Society. Over delectable, sumptuous scotches and with the occasional good cigar in hand, we have open, honest, and uninhibited conversation about whatever strikes our fancy. Whether it's the critical issue of the day or a deep dive down the rabbit hole, we take it all seriously while having a good time. Join us for a stiff drink and a great conversation. Are you an oldest child, Matthew?
A what?
An oldest child.
I am not. I am a middle child.
Oh, that's it. That explains such a lot.
Yeah, so many people like to say, but they never have any specifics.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You want to know why?
Because there are none.
Bingo.
Well, I don't know if you choose to believe these studies, but hey, I've seen some studies that talk about birth order and the effect that birth order has on a person's experience growing up, etc., etc.
Yeah, in mice.
Yep, yeah, they're talking about mice here. They're talking about people. But I'm sure it's the same.
I know they're talking about people. That's
I would believe the mice thing, because you know.
Mm-hmm.
We are that people.
Cool.
Yeah. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Sunday Scotch Society. My name is Kyle Quincy Shireen Vaughan Cedric Parker. I am the co-pilot of this little excursion into the world of single malt, blended Scotch whiskies, rums, fine tequilas, sipping gins and vodkas, cachaça and ouzo, grappa, all of the different spirits that refined individuals around the world find themselves drawn to. We have started our journey focusing on Scotch, because that is an area in which, for better or worse, I may have some experience. I won't say expertise. I will say experience. And on this little excursion into the world of Scotch, I am joined by one of my favorite people, whom I will ask to both introduce himself and give his Scotch bona fides at this moment.
I am your humble co-pilot, I guess, for today, Matthew B. Kelly, and my Scotch bona fides, is it fide or fides? I'm never sure.
Neither am I, so we're going to go with my pronunciation.
Okay. Which I've forgotten already, so...
Fides.
Yeah, so, I mean, basically, I'm just a coattail rider, sir. I'm here to learn. And I think that is all that I need.
I feel like that is... I don't know if I agree with that.
Be that as it may.
But I agree isn't really the issue, is it?
I heard a little bird told me that recently there was a spiritual Monday. Is that right?
It is in fact something that has been posited by the government of the Bahamas, as I recall correctly, internally speaking, not necessarily a an externally, you know, validated event. but it is a thing that has been said in the context of our government's institutions. They were recently said to be celebrating something called Spiritual Monday. Yes.
Well, I'm not quite sure what that is, what that means, but I am intrigued by the connection between spiritual and spirits. So I'm moved to ask, what you got there for your tipple today?
Today's tipple is something that I found almost by accident. It is something with which I am not personally familiar. And so I am, once again, as I said last episode, this is so much of this is about just experimenting and seeing something interesting and taking a swing. And today I am sipping something called the Altmore of the Foggy Moss. And
I am very interested.
It's a Speyside single malt. Speyside is so occasionally you'll hear people talk about Highland Scotches and Lowland Scotches, and that is literally a reference to geographical elevation. The Highland Scotches are up in the mountains. Yeah. It's called Speyside because it refers to the area around the River Spey in the northeast of Scotland. And the two best-selling whiskies, single malt whiskies in the world, Glenlivet and Glenfiddich, both come from Speyside. So this is we've talked a little bit about how the style of the whiskey is related to and reflected by or reflective of the location and the place in which the whiskey is made. So if we know what the Glenlivet and the Glenfiddich taste like, then we will be able to have some estimation, or at least a starting place, for what the Altmore of the Foggy Moss is going to taste like. And I'm pretty excited about it, because there's a bit of a story, and I, you know, you and I like stories, right? So the Altmores, they refer to it as a clean and fruity taste, comes from the gorse and heather-filled waters of the Foggy Moss. And specifically, this barley that is used to malt the Altmore of the Foggy Moss is free from peat smoke. And that's one of the things that really made me kind of, oh, that'll be interesting, because peat is one of the almost, it's almost become indispensable in distillation now. Everybody wants their whiskey to have just a hint of smokiness, right? And so to see a scotch that is being distilled deliberately without the peat smoke is, I'm excited to see what it tastes like. So it's about 100 and some, well, more than that. Started distilling it in 1897, if I remember my research. So, you know, however old that is. And it has very interesting, I guess the absence of the peat smoke is also reflected in the color, because it isn't as like, you know, we have sometimes that burnished copper. This is much more like a pale, like maybe even a dark straw type color. You know, it's not dark at all. So I'm very interested to see where this particular tipple goes. That's my answer to what my tipple of the day will be.
Excellent. Now, I hope you kept your promise and have those other tipples on hand for when we meet again in person.
I did.
Because
I did indeed.
I am quite looking forward to those.
Mm-hmm.
Today,
I would never leave you comfortless, Matthew. Come on.
Oh, I know there will always be something great. However, you know, If it's a good tipple, I think you'll want to share it. And maybe I might miss out on it. Anyway,
No, I understand, but no, it's the dad rabbit and the Misaki blended from both blends, one from New York, the Dead Rabbit Bar in New York, and Misaki is a Japanese. So I trust I have you sorted, my friend.
Well, today I am back on an old standard, Buffalo Trace.
Oh wow. Okay, you trying to get a little heavy out there.
Oh man. These good things last, so it is not an all uncommon for me to be back to something throughout the year. And I keep saying it. I'm not a big bourbon guy, but there are exceptions, and this is one of them. I'm just looking forward to popping this cork, man.
Yeah, Buffalo Trace has, I mean, we've talked long and hard about it on the show. It is definitely a drinkable bourbon. It is to me as a sort of as a placeholder for the whole class of proper bourbons. I think Buffalo Trace is like it is a good stand-in for this is what bourbon should taste like. And then from there, you have the different complications and specializations that people can get into, like the Widow Jane and or the super small batch people like Blanks and those other places that make really specialized bourbons. So yeah,
Yeah,
I think
the whole economics of this really intrigues me because when you say super small batch, right? My general understanding is that they may be doing this in big sections, so that a batch may be going on with another batch. Like I'm not sure, but Buffalo Trace, I think, is somewhere in the order of like maybe 40 barrels per batch, right? So what the heck does a super small batch look like? Like, is that 10 barrels? Is that like how, and how do you make those unit economics make sense? Just
by
something to think about.
charging a premium.
Oh, for sure, for sure. But still, like, it's not like the bottles come out at 500, do they?
Well, I don't know. I mean, so this was published in Franklin County, Kentucky, Fr and Frankfort, where Buffalo Trace is headquartered. And the statement is, for the last few years, Buffalo Trace Distillery has been hard at work on its $1.2 billion infrastructure investment, some of which involves new barrel warehouses. At a capacity of 58,800 barrels each, the addition of 10 new warehouses have given this National Historic Landmark distillery an on-site barrel inventory of over 1 million aging whiskey barrels. So the fact is, it's almost impossible, really, to think of Buffalo Trace with millions and millions of barrels in inventory as small batch bourbon. But
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? It kind of goes against the
I wasn't insinuating that they were a small batch. I'm just saying that my light reading on it indicated that batches were done in approximately like 40 barrel sections.
Right,
Now,
but
like I
those
said, that
that
doesn't
is
mean
specifically the
necessarily that this
Buffalo Trace
only
small batch, though.
okay.
You see what I'm saying? That's not the standard Buffalo Trace, like Kentucky Straight Bourbon. That's the Buffalo Trace small batch Kentucky Straight Bourbon, which is a different offering than the I suppose one would call it the standard. I don't know. So yeah. And when you look at a place like Schenck's, for instance, which is a Kentucky Sour Mash whiskey, they only made 2,920 bottles. Period. Of that whiskey. And the bottle I bought was 2,158 of the 2,920 bottles in that batch.
All so right. I'll look into that a bit more.
Oops. Yeah. Sorry, I mean it's a fascinating thing. I thought it was worth going down a bit of a rabbit hole there just to see, because I like small batch whiskeys for the specialization and small batch bourbons for the same reason, but I'm not certain. I did not wish to. What am I trying to say? I didn't wish to denigrate Buffalo Trace unnecessarily, right? Because I'm a big Buffalo Trace fan. But when you started talking about Unionville 40 Barrel, wait a second, Buffalo Trace is huge. So yeah, I just wanted to clarify. I think it's the single barrels, then there's the flagship, and then there's specifically the small batch, which is a different vibe.
Yeah, yeah. And again, the particulars though around what a batch means, and then how that is blended. Yeah. So for instance, you know, let's say you've got 8 to 10 years on this set of barrels, and then you got another 40, and they're all like they're going at the same time, but at the same time, you are not necessarily only blending those barrels. You picking and choosing, maybe younger, maybe older, to, you know, just bring it to the taste. Like the specifics are, I imagine, get really, really important. So anyway, I will go in and up my whiskey and bourbon game by looking at exactly these variables that I'm not sure about.
I want to say one last thing about small batch, just for the purpose of keeping our conversation honest. Small batch don't mean anything. Right?
Okay.
It's not what I mean is that the term does not refer to a regulation. Right. It's not a regulated term. It is like Buffalo Trace determines what small batch is to them. So they could say, a company that ships 700,000 barrels a year could say that they made a batch of whiskey, they made only 5,000 barrels. For them, that's small batch, that's super small batch. You see what I'm saying? But another company who only ships 10,000 barrels a year, that for them, small batch would have to be, you know, 1,000 barrels or something along those lines. And so it is something that, and it's not even a percentage wise thing. It is up to the distiller and the whiskey brand to say, okay, this is our small batch offering, so to speak, excuse me. That makes sense?
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
You know what time it is?
It is time to do the thing.
Indeed.
Are you going to start this time?
Sure.
All right, well, I
have no problem with that.
Let's hear the thing then. Okay, that sounded like you farted on the microphone.
You want me to take two?
No, I'll just read. That sounded great.
Here we go.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there you go. I believe in that.
Whoa. No, not overpowering, but the nose in that is Can I say? Pleasantly strong. Oh yeah. Now there's the honey that a lot of people talk about. I was didn't get that until the finish on the doers. Man, this is quite a bit of caramel on the nose. I got hints of citrus. There's a vague fruitiness that I really can't pinpoint at this point. And a bit of wood. I like that. Shall I wait for you or go straight in for the palate?
I mean, usually you are the one encouraging me to just jump straight in.
Well,
So
here I go.
since you are on the runway, you might as well go ahead.
Oh, that is. I don't have these enough to as frequently as one would need to say I'm familiar with that. Of course, I've had it before, but that's quite different on the palate than the nose would indicate. And I'm surprised by it, even though I've had it before. What is that? Okay, definitely the honey comes out, but it sort of glazes over the other things. There's a slight spice in here. I'm going to lean cinnamon-ish, and instead of the woody flavors, I get a like a hint of leather. Almost. That's interesting. Oh, and it's quite warming. And that finish, it kind of lingers without a cloy. Very nice. Like I say, it's just warm. You know what? This is the season for this. And it doesn't have that like overly powerful sweetness that I have a bit of a distaste for. I mean, some bourbons tends to stick out. Oh, and there's the vanilla hitting on the, for me, on the finish. I don't know if anyone else would pick that up before, but I'm pleased with that.
That sounds awfully like you're having a good time.
Hey, man, don't threaten me with it.
I guess that is my cue to do the thing myself then.
Please.
Oh, okay. Okay. So what we're looking at here, because there is no peat smoke, I was anticipating not having, that smoky aroma. And it is exactly like that. There is no smokiness, but there is. I don't know if it's sweetness. There's something. Oh, I love it. There's a sweetness. It's not honey, or if it is honey, it's not like the regular honey that we think of. It's more like an artisanal honey, almost like an artisanal honey that has a little like both a floral and a citrus note to it. Without being perfumey. It's almost like I smell lavender without being quite that herbal. But I can also tell that this is a very alcohol forward whiskey. It's 46% ABV.
Speaking of that, I'm quite surprised. that this Buffalo Trace is 45%. That didn't taste like 90 proof bourbon to me.
All
Oh,
right,
that.
I have to taste this now. I'm sorry, I was just really lost in trying to parse through all of the different aromas on the nose here, and it's just
And I understand while you're doing that, I went back in for a whiff, and this thing is almost Starbucksy in its sort of sweet overtones on the nose, but not on the palate.
All right, so here we go. The Altmore 18-year-old single malt Speyside whiskey, the Altmore of the Foggy Moss. It is definitely 46% ABV. And since it is not chill filtered, they are very clear that you should feel free to add ice and not to worry if the ice, doesn't melt quickly. So they are aware of the alcohol forward nature of the Altmore of the Foggy Moss. This it is okay. So that aside, what are we looking at here? We are looking at marmalade. We are looking at brown sugar. We are looking at unsweetened coffee. The alcohol is s strong enough to stand up through all of the different flavors that I've talked about, but it is not overpowering. It's just really strong. I feel like I could breathe fire if I lit my if I put a lit match in front of my mouth right now and blew out. I feel like I would be breathing fire, but that's not painful. When you swallow, I don't get any of that on the finish. That it all stays on the tongue. I don't know if that makes sense to you.
It does. I've experienced that on more than a few of the very nice scotches that you have introduced me to.
This is nice, man. All right. Okay. Oh, and the finish is confusing because, like I say, the burn does not continue. The alcohol burn doesn't continue on the finish. So you don't feel that, like sometimes you feel a little warmth going down your throat and spreading into your chest. You don't necessarily feel the warmth going down your throat, but you still do get that spread of nice alcohol whiskey heat in your chest. It's not hot, but warm, And on the flavor side, so that's the feeling side, but the flavor side, the finish is more citrusy than sweet. Well, not citrusy, more fruity than sweet. Like, remember, I mentioned marmalade as one of the first things that came to mind. And that is very much what I think I'm tasting on the finish here. A really subtle, gentle orange marmalade type thing. Yeah. It's really nice. But it's really strong. So when you and I sit with this in person, I want you to be warned. This is definitely one of the more alcohol forward whiskeys we've had on the show. But other than that, I like this a lot. And I don't not like it because it's alcohol forward. I'm just saying You know, we've had smoother whiskeys, but in terms of the flavor, I could see why one would say that this dram is a secret to be savored, as their what is that publicity materials would say. The Altmore Distillery is in it's on Bucky Road, and so you know they say it's a you have a taste of the old Bucky when you have the Altmore off the Altmore of the Foggy Moss. So I'm quite enjoying my taste of the old Bucky for sure. All right, that's me.
Okay. Well, I have to say that we've done so many episodes apart at this point. I may beg you to actually do an episode when we get back together with, you know, just a little taste of each instead of rolling them out one episode at a time. You know, just a little bit of a catch up. You know, just a little bit
I
of a
think
catch up.
that would be a great idea. Yeah, I think that would be a great idea. I support that 100%.
You know, I have a question for you.
Okay, go for it.
I sent you a very tiny list of videos, very short videos. And I just like to know, after promising me to look at them, you know, what you thought of those videos?
So one of the first things I thought was this is science fiction. Because it looked like a movie. It did not look like footage of actual events. I don't know if that makes any sense to you.
100%.
You understand what I'm saying, right? It was like the last movie that I saw that it made me think of was the Valerian and the City of a Thousand, the South, a Thousand Cities, or whatever it was. But there was just something about watching that booster float, and it just seemed to float into the air. It float in the air. And when the chop, when it and the chopsticks came together, it felt like science fiction. I was like, that does not look like that happened outside of CGI, right? Because I can't imagine the scale, right? But watching it on a small screen, the scale just don't look like reality.
No,
Because
that's the, this is why I thought it important to send you a scale video first.
I realized after I'd watched them that I forgot to record myself. So I was like, okay. Matthew's gonna punch me for this, but I did watch and I was like, this is incredible technological achievement. Just, I mean, as I said, yeah, I mean, we talk about one can say what one wishes about Elon Musk's politics and his personality in terms of public life, even his character in terms of what is on the public record. But as a way as a person who can spot interesting and exciting technological interesting and exciting technology, and then leverage whatever his benefits and advantages might be to create the circumstances for amazing shit to happen. I mean, Elon Musk is pretty incredible at that. Like
Yeah,
him or not.
well, like, yeah, like I say, I don't really want to talk about people who I don't know, and I especially don't like personalities that are engaged in anything around political. It's just too, There's too much charge around those types of issues to have a sensible conversation most of the time. Not all the time, but most of the time. But man, when you're talking about concrete stuff that humans have done, oh yeah, this is right up there. So yeah, and to me, this is one of those things that says, yes, there's a lot of crap in the world, and we should definitely focus on fixing a lot of crap, but there's also a lot of good things happening, and some of them are very inspiring. To me, this is one of them.
I agree with that. I agree with that. I think I'm, if I remember right, I posted on Facebook, I think it was, that this is the kind of thing that parents of children who are technologically, mechanically, electronically, scientifically inclined and have a bit of imagination, that this is the kind of content that the parent should make sure their child is consuming. I'm imagining that a child like that would have found this content anyway. But just in case, this is the kind of thing you sit with your kid and you say, I want to show you something. You don't have to say, I want to show you something cool. You just say, you don't even have to like it, but you got to sit here and you got to watch it. And if they have questions, then you could go through whatever, Google, I'm sure, will provide all of an amazing list of talking points on what you're looking at. But it's like, even as a 52-year-old who is only remotely interested in science as a real thing, who's much more interested in science fiction, just to look at it was such an eye opener. It just made my mind go into in so many different directions. It was just fascinating stuff, man. And I can't imagine being a child and seeing something like that. What that would unlock in terms of potential, and in terms of just imaginative material, you know?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. It made me feel like a child. And, it's not the first time, because the first time that thing flew and had a spectacular ending in fire, it still had the, crazy sci-fi vibe about it. Like, because those engines burn methane, there's not a lot of smoke at the back. And so you just see these glowing engines, and it looks like you said, it's like, this has to be CG. And I don't know. It puts even people who are not super interested in engineering and science, like you said, but do have a lean towards sci-fi, just in awe, I think. And I'm particularly glad that you enjoyed it. That also makes me very happy.
I'm not sure why.
I delight when people are delighted by things that delight me. I mean, your joy in itself is good, but hey, you like something cool that I like.
Yeah,
Cheers to
well,
you.
good. Yes, I agree. I agree. Okay, so what do we do? What do we do with this now, right? I remember when I was in primary school at Queen's College. Adrian Julian Foulkes was anyone who knows me really intimately knows that Mr. Foulkes was my favorite teacher. He was very important to me, and one of the things that he did that was so powerful for me is he created something that he called the Thinkers Club, and it was a club for kids to come to after school or whatever the case may be. And the Thinkers Club was not about doing anything particular. It was about, or at least this was my experience of it anyway. You could ask the other people who were in it, like Anupama and Awana and some of the other folks. And I think Antari was in Thinkers Club too. And some other people, but it doesn't matter. The point, Sharon Stewart was there too. I know that for sure. The club was about exciting your imagination as a child. Whatever you were interested in, why were you interested in? How could you get more interested? And it wasn't that they were, it's not like Montessori, right? Montessori is all about the self-directed play and learning through self-directed play. But the Thinkers Club was, hey, let me expose you to this very interesting thing. And then the next meeting, hey, let me expose you to this very interesting thing without necessarily asking you to interact with what happened last week. Because the point was not to turn you into something. The point was to turn you on to all of these different options, all of these different ways for you to think, all of these different ways for you to interact with the world. And like, for instance, it was in Thinkers Club, if I remember correctly, and I'm pretty sure I do, that I first encountered Susan J. Wallace's poem, Balaclawdy Funeral. I don't know if you know Balaclawdy Funeral.
I don't think so.
It's Balaclawdy Funeral by Susan J. Wallace. No?
No.
Oh, my
God. I didn't have a Thinkers Club.
Come on. It's not about whether you had it. Okay, sorry. All right.
You said this is about let me see. Where you were exposed to it.
Well, no, but I mean, yes, I was exposed to it in Thinkers Club. But Balaclawdy Funeral is a piece of Bahamian poetry that I am fairly sure.
I don't think that was on our curriculum, so.
Are you serious?
Coming up. I'm serious, man. The access to Bahamian books, including poetry, was not that great when I came up.
Wow. All right. I mean, it starts now. Sarah, let me see how much I can remember. Now, old Balaclawdy son and me was teaching side by side, so I couldn't help but go to church when old Balaclawdy died. I only tend to show my face for the family to see, then sneak right up the aisle to the side door and be free. And then she goes on to tell this incredible story about what happens at this funeral. And she gets stuck at the funeral. And the reason she gets stuck is because she sat in a seat that gave her access to the door, but then some people came and sat right next to her and blocked off her access to the door. So she would have had to actually get up and make a scene to get out and go free. So she was stuck for the rest of this funeral. And it was just, it's such a funny story about how Bahamian funerals are unique and interesting things, right? But I learned that poem in sixth grade. I'm 52, and it is still one of my favorite pieces of literature and culture. That is the power that Thinkers Club had on an impressionable young Quincy. And I feel like when I watched the booster and the chopsticks thing, I could see somebody who had created something like Thinkers Club putting something like that in front of a bunch of curious, intelligent children. And I could see that experience of watching that and then talking about it and then thinking about it leading to like amazing things. So I guess that's, I don't know what your experience is in, well, I know, I don't know. I don't, I, so as a father of a curious and intelligent child, part of my enjoyment of being Maya's father was exposing her to things that I thought were interesting and watching the way she reacted and interacted with these things. And her mother did the same thing. And I know you don't have kids, yet. And I'm speaking over you and putting mouth on you. Yes. You don't have kids yet, but these are, it's not happening in the schools unless there's a particular kind of teacher present. But it's like this, wow, this is weird, because almost it seems like we're talking about third spaces again, right? Where people can interact with this wonderful kind of sexy content that just excites your imagination and makes you think, wow, the world is so cool. I don't know. That's where I'm at right now. I don't have anything particular to say about that, except that is what my brain is on right now.
Yeah, and I think this is just one example of really cool stuff going on in the world. And I think that although we need to address problems, we can't be a society that is focused on problems all the time. We have to have a positive vision of the world. We have to train kids to have that positive vision of the world, what of the possibilities that are out there. And it's one of the things that I really enjoyed from a book called
Did
who's
you
that
really
by?
enjoy this book?
Yeah, no. It was great. It's by Peter Cook. Well, anyway, by this famous consultant talking about building together and not being problem focused and not being solution focused, because that's a trap in which
I'm seeing something on Google called Archigram or Archigram. Is that it?
No. Being solution focused can be a trap, because solutions to what? You are still concentrating on problems, whereas having a positive vision, a thing that we're going towards, what he calls that thing that we're going to build together, that's what really takes you past all the problems and drives you through all of the hardships, but towards something positive in the world that you're building, instead of just trying to focus on all the little potholes and obstacles in the road to get there. You're actually focused on what's the destination. Can't believe I blanked on that.
Yeah, it happens. It happens.
Thank you, Buffalo Trace.
Yeah, don't blame the liquor, my brother. Don't blame the liquor. No, this is not one of those blame it on the situations. The alcohol ain't doing you nothing.
So that concept comes from Peter Block, and the particular book was Community, an enormously appreciated gift from Rusie Finlayson, actually. So thank you very much for that, Rusie.
Rusie is a great, great source of interesting commentary and information. So yeah, I'm not surprised that he would have brought something interesting into your experience. Listen, man, this has been a great conversation. I am really excited about the Altmore of Foggy Moss. I can't wait till you and I sit together and we go through our little lineup of all the things that we've tried outside of each other's company. We'll probably have to have a spit bucket and a clear path to the bathroom, because otherwise I feel sorry for wherever we record the pod.
I'm taking literal slip.
Yeah, literal
sips,
slips, yeah.
my friend.
I know. See, there you go. That's what I'm saying now, right? Buffalo Trace got you already. So yeah.
Yeah.
So I can't wait to see you.
And, well, I think that's going to be next episode, my friend. Look forward to it.
Yeah, let's hope. All righty, buddy. Yeah. Ladies and gents, thank you for riding along with us here on the Sunday Scotch Society. We will catch you when we catch you, which hopefully is next week sometime. Matthew and I are working to get our social media game together, to get our maybe I don't know if we're going to do a website anytime soon, but we'll definitely be on social media in the next little while. But you can email us at neat@sundayscotch.com. neat@sundayscotch.com. We'd love to hear from you, and until then, does that over you.
Yeah. Ciao.
Check it out.